it's in the breaking, we come unbound. And it's in the giving, we are found. Yeah, you can barely change.
Welcome to A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, a podcast dedicated to the telling of authentic stories and the sharing of insightful wisdom, exploring science and spirituality, medicine and Mother Nature. No topic is off limits when it comes to growing our personal understanding and supporting our collective well-being. With your host, Dr. Rob Abbott, a family medicine resident practicing spiritually focused and evolutionarily informed functional medicine, we hope to nourish your being so that you can flourish in whatever the moment has called for you to do.
And I know you try.
In episode 30 of A Medicinal Mind, Wisdom and Well-Being, I share space with one of the visionary hearts behind autoimmune wellness, pioneering health coach and nutritional therapy consultant, Angie Ault. You may remember in episode 25, I held an inspiring conversation with the other half of this courageous duo, Mickey Trescott. And in this episode, I continue the conversation with Angie as we seek to uncover the secrets behind communal healing, the real roots of wholesome lifestyle change, and the hope that is born when we begin to see the past, no matter how troubling, not as something to run from, but as something to grow into. In this podcast, we begin by exploring Angie's story, a story of suffering, renewal, and unfathomable faith, leading her to her current calling as a health coach, guiding others through the uncertainty and hurt of autoimmune illness. Angie highlights her innovative initiative, SAD to AIPN6, a group coaching program that has led thousands of folks through their transition to the autoimmune protocol and sustainable lifestyle change. Speaking on its early origins and immediate success into its most recent period of growth, Angie offers us some insights into the structure of the program, who is actually involved in the group, and how truly does one support those through the healing journey. Straying perhaps from the measurable and describable, we ask some curious questions behind the cultivation of community, the opening to vulnerability, and the eventual path to empowered wellness. Is it really all about food? We then explore Angie's most recent collaboration with Dr. Gauri Kanjeti, director of the Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program at the Scripps Clinic in San Diego, California. Together, the two partnered to guide 15 patients through a modified version of Angie's revolutionary program, ultimately leading 12 of the 15 participants from multiple years of debilitating illness, despite significant pharmacologic therapy, into clinical remission and newfound health. I cannot express enough how much I enjoyed this conversation with Angie. Navigating through mild sleep deprivation and a few stumbling sentences to somehow begin to answer the ultimate question. How do we get well? And who do we need to actually do it? I hope you enjoy the show. Well, Angie, thank you so much for sharing a space here today to record a podcast.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks so much for having me, Rob.
I could start in so many places, but the first place I really believe we should start this conversation is having you share really why it is you even entered this space of healing, because something tells me it wasn't to get into the role that you're playing now in so many people's lives.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I didn't wake up one day and think, oh, I should become a health coach and an author. That didn't really happen. What happened is that, I had my own journey with autoimmune disease. It started shortly after my daughter was born, when I was 21 years old. like a lot of women, you know, with hormonal changes, that can be kind of a risky period for developing autoimmune disease. I also had a C-section, so I'm sure the disruption with surgery to my microbiome and everything was a factor. And it was also a pretty high stress pregnancy. So I think all those factors kind of came together and tripped the trigger for me. You know, Terry Walls always says that, you know, genes load the gun, but environment pulls the trigger. And I think that's exactly what happened. That was the trigger pull in my situation. And shortly after that, I developed the first symptoms of my first autoimmune disease to be diagnosed, which was lichen sclerosis, which is a skin disorder. And then shortly after my diagnosis for that, I started to develop what I now know are the symptoms of celiac disease. At the time, I didn't know that that's what it was, and it took 11 more years to get a diagnosis. By the time I got diagnosed, I was very, very ill. I was extremely malnourished. You know, the damage of celiac disease kind of, you know, had gone really far at that point. And along the way, I was also diagnosed with endometriosis, which kind of is one of those maybe or maybe not autoimmune diseases on the list. But yeah, it was this kind of crazy journey. And by the time I got diagnosed with celiac, just a simple gluten-free diet really wasn't enough of a fix. I continued to actually get more ill. I was starting to have anaphylaxis to other foods. I was ending up in the ER all the time. I was just really debilitated. I was having a lot of mental and emotional health problems by that point too. And I realized I was going to need something more, and I started to do some research, and I came across what was then the kind of first beginning threads of the autoimmune protocol online. And I decided that with three autoimmune diseases, that was probably what I needed to do. And I jumped right in. And 3 days later, my mental and emotional health picture just changed very dramatically, which gave me the impetus to keep going. And 6 weeks later, my gluten antibodies had dropped by half. 6 months later, it was like having a new body. And a year later, I changed everything about my life because I wanted to help other people get this information so they wouldn't suffer for as long as I did.
It's incredible to think. You said 11 years of basically walking in muddy waters, feeling, you know, probably awful and just having no answers. I mean, I think even if you have amazing health, walking in a state of uncertainty is probably one of the most uncomfortable things for any human being. And I can only imagine what that must have been like. It's scary to think that even with something theoretically as cut and dry as celiac disease, that went unnoticed and, you know, sort of underneath the radar for your physicians and to you for that long.
Yeah, it was really hard. You know, my story has like a little bit of an extra complication and twist in that I lived overseas in West Africa for the last 3 years prior to being diagnosed. And I think that, you know, I kind of reached my sickest point while I was there. And I think that that kind of made things a little bit harder in terms of getting to a diagnosis. I think that it was, you know, first of all, just accessing medical care was more challenging, obviously, in that environment. But then secondly, once I was in the U.S. in a more developed healthcare system, it was still challenging because everybody was thinking tropical diseases, you know?
Yes, bizarre stuff. Kinda,
right, exactly. It kind of threw us off a little bit and maybe delayed the process some. That said, you know, I realize in hindsight, I had some pretty clear symptoms even before that. And it's too bad that, you know, they're just not that well recognized yet in the healthcare system. And so, you know, the delay was definitely hard. At the end, you know, doctors were even considering things like, you know, lymphoma and really scary possibilities. And it's awful to be in that space and kind of feel like you're fighting this like unseen, unnamed enemy. you know, and I started to kind of doubt my own sanity, to be honest, because nobody could figure it out. I thought, oh, maybe there's something wrong with me mentally. Maybe I'm making this up somehow. And that's an awful space to be in.
I completely agree with you. I know we were sort of joking before we started this podcast. I was, you know, listening to you with Rob Wolf, and you know, we were joking. He asked you this leading question about what were you better in the tropical environment with all the sun and, you know, vitamin D? And as you answered in that podcast and just told us now, actually no, it was probably more of the opposite. But you know, my question for you though, in seeing the broader scope of these journeys, you know, I see most people would never go through such challenging times, you know, and face just such uncertainty. But do you regret any part of your time spent in West Africa leading up to what you're doing now?
No, I absolutely do not. It was really, really challenging. And there were definitely some moments where, you know, we were really going like, maybe this was not the best choice for me and for our family to be in an environment like this, where just accessing even really, really basic care, let alone anything more advanced, you know, when you're dealing with something like an autoimmune disease and it's getting kind of complex to deal with. Even with all of that, I don't regret it at all. I think that the most challenging situations in our life also usually offer the most personal growth, and I wouldn't be the kind of person I am now without that.
Yeah. And if you had to, this may be an impossible question, but if you had to distill down, you know, one value, concept, or idea that came through that experience, what would you say that is?
Empathy. Probably empathy. It, you know, going through what I was going through with my own health made me a lot more empathetic to others who suffer with similar things. It made me, you know, kind of understand that in a new way. Being in West Africa and in that environment, it made me really, really empathetic to people that are struggling in other ways. It really developed that part of me.
Well, I can certainly say, you know, I haven't met you in person, but from the conversations we have had together and with Mickey, and just reading much of your work, I can see that permeates everything that you do. So I completely can see that. And I think it's probably why, you know, amidst all other amazing reasons that you guys have such a wonderful following and people who just truly resonate with your mission. From the beginning, I've always really attached to your efforts because of the authenticity behind it. It's always felt that, you know, it's been coming from a place of true empathy to others and really just wanting to make this accessible and possible. And I really have, you know, no words to say how grateful I am for your work and just seeing the future of collaboration between health coaches and clinicians in the medical space to make these, like, you know, the autoimmune protocol and other lifestyle changes more feasible and more doable. And I've talked about in numerous podcasts with, you know, other health coaches that, you know, one day I think the future is going to be where, you know, someone's going to ask you, or the question that, you know, it'll come up is not who is your doctor, but who is your health coach? And yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, thank you. I'm glad that our work has resonated so much with you. That means a lot to me. We're certainly giving it our best shot out here. In terms of that future, yeah, that would be awesome. And I totally hope it happens. Not necessarily like as though, you know, doctors and the respect that we traditionally have for them would be replaced or anything by health coaches, but that we would see that the special training of doctors can be more reserved and used more wisely, I guess, and that the role of the health coach can be kind of to fill that gap between the patient's real lives and the doctors and their specialized training, you know?
Yeah, I see it as just, you know, being able to honor the skill set and expertise of different people. And realistically, right now at this point, even with much of my reading in this space and following other health coaches, if that was my day job, I would probably do a pretty terrible job of it. I would probably get lost into wanting, where are my lab results? Where are the some of the technical stuff? But when we bring ourselves together and lose the ego of what is, the hierarchy of who's the most important, clinician or healer at this point for this person, we can really help people. And like I said before, I'm just really excited for the future because of the types of programs and spaces that health coaches like yourself are holding. So I probably many people listening to this are very familiar with your work and the autoimmune protocol, but just to give, all the listeners here, so we're all sort of starting on the same foundation, what do we mean when we say, the autoimmune protocol?
So the autoimmune protocol is kind of, it kind of grew out of the paleo diet. It's for an easy way to talk about it, it's kind of a more restrictive form of the paleo diet used specifically for folks who are trying to manage autoimmune disease. And so it removes some extra food groups. On a traditional paleo diet, you would remove grains, especially gluten-containing grains. You would remove dairy. And then with the autoimmune protocol, we take it a step further, and we remove legumes and eggs, nuts and seeds, the nightshade vegetables, which includes white potato, the hot and sweet peppers, eggplant, and tomato. And then also, obviously included in there is alcohol, coffee, chocolate, kind of all the things that people are
all
so
the
sad
things
to say goodbye
loves.
To. right. My job is to rain on everyone's parade. So we remove all those things, but it's not just about removal. Those foods are removed because they can have a big impact on the immune system, especially in folks who have a sensitive immune system, like with autoimmune disease. They can be drivers of inflammation. They could be underlying food sensitivities that are causing issues. But then we also add in nutrient-dense foods. So we have a big focus on things like organ meats, fish and shellfish, good fats, good quality fats like olive oil and avocado oil, but also animal fats like lard and tallow. We obviously a really, really big focus on vegetables. We bring all of this in to kind of fuel then the healing that needs to take place, kind of really load up the body on nutrient density so that the healing process can get started. And then the kind of other factor is lifestyle adjustments, working on things like sleep and stress management, movement, your connection with others and with the natural world. All those pieces get layered in there too.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the most important point to make, at least in my opinion. We can get all into, a fuss about which dietary protocol is the best for the individual. And the reality is we're discovering it needs to be incredibly personalized. But diet is just one specific thing, even in the scope of this protocol where, we are eliminating certain foods that are can be quite immunogenic. So, my guess is, and here's my leading question, that just handing somebody a list of the foods to eat and the foods to not eat isn't really going to be the savior to this individual, that there needs to be a much broader view of lifestyle change and support. And I think that's exactly where you come in with your program. So would love for you to speak about your thoughts of all of these facets to lifestyle change and how you first started in trying to implement this with your clients as part of your specific program.
Yeah. So back in 2014, I had been already using the autoimmune protocol for 2 years at that point. I'd obviously had a lot of profound personal success with it. I had gone through the reintroduction process at that point. So, you know, the autoimmune protocol, you don't just like live in that elimination phase forever. Eventually when you start to experience remission of some of your symptoms, then you start to, you know, experiment with adding foods back in and start to kind of tailor and individualize a diet that really works for you. So I was kind of at that point. I had started to work a little bit with one-on-one clients, and I was seeing similar results with them. The community of people around me who were also kind of experimenting on this in the N equals one setting was starting to grow, and I was seeing that working. But one thing I noticed was that there was this group of people out there that wanted to do it, but they just were kind of lacking the support, and they maybe weren't good candidates for a cold turkey transition to the protocol.
You mean it's not easy to just one day suddenly go from eating chocolate and drinking alcohol and and some next thing
Yes, exactly. It's not easy to make those big changes, and some folks are able to do it, you know. I think if your motivation is extremely high, if you have the kind of like the right personality and an outside lifestyle that's very supportive of it, then it can happen. But, you know, most people don't have that kind of setup, you know? And that was the thing I was seeing. This group of people actually was the majority, you know, with those of us that made the change just kind of, you know, basically overnight, were kind of the minority. And I thought we need to address this problem and make this more accessible to all these folks. So, I started working on what later became my group program, SAD to AIP in 6, SAD as in the standard American diet to the autoimmune protocol over 6 weeks. And I structured the program to slowly eliminate foods in a gentle phased process, while also slowly adding in the nutrient dense foods and one at a time addressing the lifestyle factors. And the foods that I eliminated, you know, we started with the foods that are least nutrient dense and most likely to be symptom drivers.
Yes.
And we ended with foods that are more nutrient dense and least likely to be symptom drivers. So basically, I gave my group members the most bang for their buck at the beginning. You know, we started with like alcohol and gluten and, you know, grains, mm-hmm. especially the gluten grains coming out right away, because I knew that, you know, if they had wins right away, it would help keep them motivated to keep going through the process. And then, you know, I also added in obviously all the coaching piece of it, you know, in these kind of small groups where they could get support from other people doing the same thing, and also access health coaches, who could help with troubleshooting, just kind of keep the inspiration and motivation high, and help them follow this structured process, because it's also, you know, it's learning about how to plan and prep meals. It usually means some schedule changes to our lives. You know, a standard American home is like, you know, go to the pharmacy and pick up your pills and on your way home, stop at fast food. And
sadly, yes, that's way too common.
Right, exactly. And we don't really have our lifestyles set up to support things like taking time to carefully plan a menu and pick out foods that are going to be good for you, and then go and shop for those foods and have time in your day-to-day life to prepare those foods at home. And so it was also about helping people learn how to structure their time around that. And so I launched in 2014. I think the first program ran in April of 2014, and I had, I think, 20 folks in that group. And then I just kept doing it, and it was really successful. And I saw that the majority of my group members were having really great changes and really loving having that structured support. And, now, you know, about 2,000 people have gone through the program, and 2018 will be our fifth year.
That's so amazing to hear. And I can only imagine what it must be like, you know, as one individual trying to help one individual and then realizing, actually, no, this one-on-one thing is just, it's too small. You know, God has something bigger for me to do, and I need to be, you know, find these bigger groups. And then actually through that, you know, we'll discover that they can support each other more than I could support any one of them by themselves. And I think we're starting to realize the importance of community and social engagement and just that feeling of connection between individuals, especially in this space where you're vulnerable and looking for healing, that, you know, as a clinician, we just can't hold that type of space with one person, no matter how brilliant you are. And so I was kind of curious, you know, what was the dynamic like when you started with that first group and moved forward? Was it, you know, was it just you and, you know, the 20 individuals, or how were you supporting them as a community?
Well, so everything is done online. We have a private Facebook group, so everybody kind of has, you know, a space to check into as they have time. You know, making it location and time independent, I think, is an important part of why it's successful. You know, folks already have a lot of demands on their time, and not everyone can, you know, be in the nearest big city with a great, you know, AIP group or whatever. So, I think that was really important. And then, you know, I would just be checking in daily with them. I had discussion prompts that not only helped keep them on track with, the, you know, the specific tasks or the specific, things we were learning that day, but also, you know, discussion prompts to help them kind of explore the process a little bit more. Sometimes it was as simple as sharing recipes. Sometimes it was more deep, like, you know, towards the end of the process, were any of them starting to be able to reflect on their journey with autoimmune disease in a new light? You know, a lot of people come into the autoimmune disease experience being very angry at their body and feeling really, you know, burdened. But hopefully as they heal, they start to maybe see what was positive and start to practice some resilience, you know? So talking about things like that, and then, you know, they had each other too for support. And yeah, that's so important, that community bit. It's ideal if people have, people in their real life, especially within the family that they're living in the home they're living in, who are really supportive of this process, but it's not always the case. And even when they do have those people, they might not have people who specifically understand what it's like to be dealing with a chronic illness that others can't really see. You know, for instance, if someone we love gets a cancer diagnosis, everyone kind of knows what that means.
Yes.
And what that's going to require in terms of support. But, you know, if you say to someone, I got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, nobody around you really knows what that means. And there's no end point.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that makes it hard, to, you know, our society doesn't really have a way to deal with that. So being in the small group and being able to talk to other people who understood exactly what it was like to be dealing with that, and also what it means to have to change your life so dramatically to hopefully heal, you know, they got a lot from each other in that setting. So yeah, in the beginning, it was just me and those 20 folks. And then quickly, enrollment outpaced my ability to, you know, kind of be there for everyone. And I had to bring on team members. Right now I have, 4 coaches who also work with me.
That's so wonderful. Just kind of slowly building this supportive community of, you know, like-minded and just authentic individuals trying to help others. I mean, I bet initially you were probably a little reluctant, like, you know, it's nice if I can have complete control over this, it's just me. And then you just start to see the success, the problems that come when it's so successful and people resonate with that.
Yeah. And, you know, I choose coaches who not only have nutritional therapy and health coaching training, but I also choose coaches who have autoimmune disease themselves and have used AIP themselves. So, their connection with the group members is very authentic.
Yeah, it's something that I find can be challenging for some medical providers. You know, much of what we see in a day-to-day basis and what we're helping people with, we don't really have a personal relationship with. You know, I can't go and have the individual who's had two heart attacks and a stroke come into my clinic and say, I know what it feels like because I haven't had a heart attack or a stroke. I have no idea what that feels like. And we sometimes will accidentally, you know, in trying to be empathetic, start to say words like that. And then, you know, on more than one occasion, I've had individuals look back at me like, you're crazy, right? You haven't gone through what I've gone through. And even with the same diagnosis, people's experiences are radically different. And how have you found through this process, you know, how have you been able to navigate that sort of divide of where people are starting at the beginning? Because something tells me that, you know, day one of this group, everyone is not, they may be motivated to try this program, but what they bring to the table and the experiences that they've had prior to joining this group are vastly different. How have you found to navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a challenge. You know, people come with all their different experiences and, you know, their different diagnoses, the length of time they've been dealing with the disease. Some folks have, you know, I have people in their 70s who join who've had a diagnosis for like 40 years, you know, or more. And then I have, you know, I've had teens join with the support of their parents, you know, so it's really all over the board there. I think what I try to do is help focus the group on things that are common experiences. So for instance, whatever we're working on that particular day or that particular week in terms of the, you know, dietary and lifestyle changes, I try to bring some commonalities in there. One thing I try to do is tap into the differences in experiences. So for instance, maybe some of the people coming in have experimented some with diet and lifestyle and trying to manage their disease while others are completely brand new to the process. And so people can share advice with each other. I make it a very, very safe environment to ask questions or tell the group when you're struggling, so that we can offer support. I think that makes it easier. You know, some folks might be coming from experiences where it's not okay to be vulnerable and say that you're having a hard time, you know, making a change. So, we try to make it really, really safe to be able to do that and find that kind of support. You know, obviously it's not a totally flawless, situation. You know, sometimes there are folks that are dealing with challenges that just can't be met in the group setting. And, you know, we do our absolute best to address that, but sometimes, you know, we have to refer folks on to more focused and individualized support. But, I would say for the majority of people, we're able to find the commonalities and work through the process together and have everyone feel real supported.
Yeah. Some people may be listening and like, why are you focusing this much on these things that, you know, I will get to the details of, what exactly all the specifics of the dietary intervention and this, but I find myself time and time again, just being, you know, drawn to these group dynamics and the psychosocial component of these interventions that I don't think get talked about as much or, you know, given as much credit for the role that they play in the healing process. And I just love hearing, you know, the aspects of that in which, you know, and how you've navigated that and what's come up. I mean, I'm sure you've learned so much in these 4 or 5 years in doing this program about, you know, these group dynamics and just, the importance of being able to hold a space where it's, you know, you can have full disclosure and feel supported and that no one here is going to, you know, take anything out from this group to share and break that trust. It's, I don't know. I just, right. I find myself like time and time again, wanting to focus and understand more of that, seeing that really the root of healing actually starts when you feel connected to others and are able to really tell your story and not be judged by it.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so crucial. You know, we start the process by letting them introduce themselves and tell their stories. And so everybody is aware of what everyone else is dealing with. And even, you know, right there on day one, a lot of folks start to form, you know, bonds with each other because they see similar diagnoses or maybe they live in the same area or, you know, particular challenges are in common, whatever. And then, you know, we also try to redirect people when they kind of maybe get stuck in a rut with the process.
The whole reframing perspective.
Yeah, the reframing thing. And that can be really powerful, especially when the rest of the group kind of joins in and they see, oh, you know, so-and-so was also struggling with that and they tried reframing and they just shared that with me and maybe it does work and maybe I'll try. And, you know, they form pretty tight bonds with each other. The first group that I ever had still has a separate support group where they keep in contact with each other. And most of them go on and form groups like that and try to stay active and support with each other.
That just has to make you smile. That enduring community that you just created. I mean, over a few short weeks and what it's become. I don't know. I'm smiling and I didn't even start the group.
It makes me really happy. I was definitely missing that myself in my own journey, and was obviously relieved when I met people like Mickey and Eileen Laird and Sarah Ballantyne. And so knowing that was so important and finding a way to create that for other people, yeah, it's very gratifying, and I hope it really, you know, changes their lives.
Yeah. Well, you talked a little bit, kind of alluded to, you know, the success of this group, of the program itself, and bringing on, you know, more health coaches and with nutritional therapy backgrounds and backgrounds themselves and just autoimmune disease. And, you know, we've talked a little bit before about how you've realized to expand this further, we need more educated health coaches. We need more people specifically versed in the autoimmune protocol and what it takes to help people make these major changes. So would love for you to talk a little bit about how you've stepped into this new role of becoming not only a support, but a teacher of teachers as you go forward to further this mission to, you know, I see a cure and reverse autoimmune disease.
Yeah. You know, I guess it was probably at some point in 2016, Mickey and I started talking and, you know, we realized that, first of all, if we wanted to see this movement scale up, we needed more people that were well-versed in using the autoimmune protocol with others. And we saw that, you know, we had plenty of colleagues around us, health coaches and nutritional therapists around us, but not everybody was specifically familiar with the protocol itself. And we saw a need to have like a place out there where you could get training and how to use it. We also wanted to share the knowledge that, it's not a dogmatic approach and help, you know, clinicians of all kinds and allied providers of all kinds learn how to kind of sail the seas of the autoimmune protocol,
yeah.
for lack of a better term, you know, help them kind of use it in a little more nuanced way. And, you know, then we started talking with our friend Sarah Ballantyne, who, you know, is kind of the person who put all the real deep research into the protocol as it stands today. And we were like, let's team up and put some training together so that we can help do this, you know. And also from just a selfish perspective, we realized like we can't continue by ourselves.
Yeah.
We need more help. So we started working on that, and then we launched the program this summer and trained our first class of 106 AIP certified coaches. They graduated in September. So, we're going to run the program again in 2018, and we're just going to keep going and build the army.
It is so exciting. I love everything in this space, the paleo space, the ancestral health space, about expanding education. You know, I just finished in September being a part of Chris Gresser's ADAPT program. And
yeah, awesome.
That was just, I mean, I think it was his second cohort. He's now, I think, working on the third and even the fourth, and it's continuing to evolve. But his passion for wanting to further educate people, because he realized, you know, I can only help so many people, even with my, you know, blog and podcast. Like, we need these providers to be versed in this process, how to think about from a functional ancestral perspective, how I can help people with some of the most debilitating chronic diseases. And I am so grateful for that opportunity and that experience and for people like him who are willing and wanting to help educate, because it's just, We can come back to, and we can keep giving people fish. We can keep giving people, you know, the end product. But if we don't teach them how to acquire it, how to make it their own, how to, you know, feel inspired and engaged and empowered, it really won't matter in the end. And so I'm really hopeful that the combination of his trainings, excuse me, and he's also getting into, you know, health coaches as well, and, you know, partnering with AIP health coaches. I mean, the future to me is bright, despite how grim it may appear to some with the health of, you know, our country and the current state of, you know, insurance and everything. You know, that can appear a little grim, but to me, I see the future is bright because there is a whole new generation of healers and providers that are being educated in this process, this way of thinking, and never seeing anything as impossible.
I couldn't agree with you more, Rob. I totally, totally agree. I'm really excited for it. And I think we're at the tipping point. So,
yeah. So I, you know, we've been speaking about the role of health coaches and the integration with, you know, allied health providers and medical doctors. And I think now is the time. It's probably the best segue I can get to discuss one of those collaborative efforts, something, you know, that you've been a part of recently and has been making major news across the ancestral space, and something I talked about in an episode earlier on this podcast series with Mickey, but this study that was performed out in California with patients with pretty actually severe inflammatory bowel disease who went through your program and the dramatic results that were seen from your intervention. And so I talked a little bit with Mickey about just some of the general ideas of the study and what happened, but wanted to really dig in with you into more of the details of this study and, you know, how it was designed and maybe get a little more granular. But would love for you to start by describing, you know, the formation of this study and the idea behind it to begin with.
Yeah, so this was like just a wonderful piece of luck in the world, I feel like. A doctor out of Scripps Clinic in San Diego, her name is Gauri Conajetti. Dr. Conajetti was approached by one of her patients who had ulcerative colitis, and he said that he wanted to try the autoimmune protocol as a method of healing. He was having a difficult time, you know, really gaining any ground with the medications, et cetera. And she said, okay, sure. Let's, you know, why don't you give it a go? And he did. And she had imaging, obviously from prior to starting. And then, you know, he came back to have a follow-up and she did more imaging and, he was healed. And she was so shocked by the amazing progress that he had made, and, you know, the visualization that it was improved, that she decided to look into AIP a little bit more deeply. And he told her that he had found most of the information on Mickey and I's website, Autoimmune Wellness. And so she went and checked out Autoimmune Wellness and read some information about the protocol on our site and saw that I run the group program SAD to AIP in 6. And she got the idea that she would like to study the protocol. And she thought, you know, this group already exists that could onboard the patients who are going to be in the study, and that would be really perfect. So she contacted us and approached us with the idea and asked if I would be interested in leading the patients through the process with my program. And I said, sure, of course. Like, what can I do for you, please? Yeah. I would love to. So we took my program and we modified it a little bit for the people going through the study, because all of them had inflammatory bowel disease. So they all had ulcerative colitis or Crohn's disease. And usually my group is people of mixed diagnosis. So we kind of tailored things a little bit more to be specific to the IBD experience. And then I added a health coach who had ulcerative colitis herself and had used AIP to heal. And I also brought on a registered dietitian because, you know, her training allowed her to be a little more specific with recommendations in the medical setting, which is beyond the scope of practice for, you know, myself and my nutritional therapy coaches. So, you know, that allowed us to kind of get a little more individualized in the process for them, for the participants. So we put everything together and we got going with the process, and we took them through the typical 6 weeks of slowly eliminating foods and adding nutrient density and starting to work on lifestyle adjustments. And then we took them an additional 5 weeks beyond the elimination phase so that they went through a maintenance period as well, before they reintroduced any foods. And the doctor and her team were testing them all along the way. We are also administering surveys, quality of life surveys and things like that. So they would have that kind of data too. And at the end, we found out that 73% of the participants were in clinical remission by week six. And they remained, all of them remained in remission through the maintenance period.
And that, so, to me,
amazing.
Is incredible, because what you just said is after week six. So, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially they hadn't even done a full week's worth of true, you know, AIP. It was just that sort of phased elimination, and we hadn't even got to the maintenance phase, and they were already doing tremendously better. Am I correct?
Right, exactly. So the way that I structure the process, by the time the group members start Monday of their sixth week, they are officially in full elimination. But, you know, again, you know, that's day one of being in full autoimmune protocol elimination phase. So it's possible that some of them may have actually already been in remission even sooner. And by that point, they were almost all of them in remission. So that's really fantastic results. You know, another important thing to note here is that most of them had long-standing disease. I think the average was like 19 years.
Yes, yes.
And most of them came into the study on various medications, including some biologics, but they still weren't in remission despite being on those medications. So it really showed that diet was the clincher.
Yeah, I know. I was just going through the study once again in terms of some of the specifics, looking at, yeah, the percentage of folks who were on these biologic agents, these pretty, you know, severe immune suppressing drugs, and were still not in remission, both, you know, clinically and or sort of combined with their symptoms and,
yeah,
you know, endoscopically and, you know, by colonoscopy. I think to me that was the most profound finding from the study, was the combination of the quality of life and then, you know, going in at week 11 and going back and visualizing the tissue, you know, with inflammatory bowel disease. One of the standards of care is doing, you know, colonoscopies, endoscopies to look at the various segments of the intestine and to look at the degree in inflammation, take biopsies. And the combination of seeing the change at the tissue level and then the change in the individual, that combination, I was just like, you know, blown away. It just sealed it in my mind. Like, this is not voodoo. This is not, yeah, just in this person's, yeah, head. They're,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly. It was just, it was really exciting. I mean, you know, to be completely honest, anecdotally, I already knew that we would probably get results like that because I had been doing it for a long time and I knew that people had really major success, but having kind of the hard numbers to go with it was obviously really exciting. And, you know, it was really exciting to have Dr. Conigetti call and talk to me about the results. And, you know, I think I probably said something like obnoxious to her, like told you so or something.
Hey, it's okay. We all have to go through a period of, you know, there was a time not too long ago when a young student and I had no idea about this space. And if you had told me that, you know, doing certain types of elimination diets could reverse things such as inflammatory bowel disease, I probably would have looked at you with, you know, like you had four eyes. So it's a process. And I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm sitting here, I've had this discussion too with other individuals. It's kind of come up in the scope of chronic disease, maybe more specifically in diabetes. I know Rob Wolf has talked a lot about, you know, when you look over the time period of a person with a disease like diabetes and the amount of, you know, money that's poured into that chronic care and just the overall burden when you think about the total number of people with diabetes and that cost, it gets staggering very quickly. And in the same way, when I look at, you know, some of these autoimmune conditions, specifically inflammatory bowel disease, and the types of drugs that are being used, the cost of these drugs for that are seemingly going to be used for, you know, years and years to try to keep people in remission. When I compare that total cost and that burden to the cost of this intervention and, you know, what can be prevented from the complications, it is equally as staggering. So I didn't know if you wanted to comment on just the, you know, where the funding came from for the study, but just give people an idea of the scope of the, you know, cost for the individual, because I know a lot of folks can be a little turned off initially by, you know, look at some of these foods and it can seem like it's a little elitist or just, you know, beyond their capacity. But we'd love for you to comment on, you know, on a very practical level, what was the cost to each patient for, you know, this study and the participants in your program?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I believe Dr. Conigetti worked on a grant to help fund the study. You know, I don't know what the costs were like per participant on the medical side of things, but on my side, I think I billed like $450 per participant, which is a little higher than I normally charge for my group program, but it was because we brought on an RD, and, you know, needed to obviously reimburse her for her time and expertise helping us, with everything. And also because we changed the structure of the program a little bit to, you know, go a little longer and, go a little deeper in terms of surveying the patients and everything. But then in terms of, you know, what the personal cost is to them, to make these dietary changes, you know, the facts are the facts. Buying higher quality foods, is more expensive. You know, our society is really run on cheap, low quality food at the moment. And that can be a really big and kind of hard to swallow change, for most people, and their budget, you know, but usually you see that balanced out in terms of what you're spending on medical care. You know, you were talking earlier about just the drugs themselves, depending on what kind of diagnosis you have when you're dealing with, you know, various kinds of chronic illness, you might be visiting the ER often, you might be seeing the doctor often. You know, you might be missing a lot of work. You know, there's changes to your bottom line in terms of your finances there too. So I think that initially the outlay for better quality food and a focus on your health, probably feels a little hard to swallow, but in the end, I think it's, you know, really balances out. I know for myself personally, I had at one point an ER visit when I was very sick, that was $12,000. So in comparison, spending more on my grocery bills is worth it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, like I said before, it's staggering to me when you look at the comparison, just one infusion of some of these drugs, you know, in the thousands of dollars when you compare that to the experience and what you're, you know, being able to prevent long term. It's sometimes initially it can be a hard sell, but when you throw some of those numbers out, it's hard to ignore. And it's really, I mean, we're getting to a point where we have no choice as a, you know, as a nation. I mean, we have no choice but to look to programs like this, because otherwise we're just, you know, autoimmune disease, diabetes, metabolic syndrome, some of these, you know, high blood pressure, some of these major chronic issues that were, you know, crippling our country are just going to bring us to our knees when it comes to the finances. And so it's obvious to me that we have to make these investments upfront, knowing what it's going to do in the long term. And I mean, more importantly to me too, this whole process is about making people feel empowered and engaged. And like you said, being able to be in their workplace, happy, fulfilled, doing the type of work that they want to do and supporting their families. I mean, I want a country of loving, healthy, joyful, caring people who are not burdened by a diagnosis they don't understand or burdened by all these ridiculous costs. And, you know, it's great to have a focus of, yeah, I want to, you know, from a clinical standpoint, let's get your colonoscopy so I don't see any issue, you know, inflammation on the biopsy. But that's just one of these, you know, doctor clinical outcomes. Like what we're much more interested in is creating a flourishing human being who is ready to support and their family and live a joyful life.
Right. You know, I think I say this all the time, but it's very, very cliche to say that nothing else matters besides your health. But when you've actually been there and you have almost no quality of life remaining, maybe even feel a little bit like you might be at death's door. It's just becomes glaringly obvious that that's true. You know, if you can't get out of your bed and live your life, then nothing else is more important. And I just think in comparison, the short-term pain of transitioning your budget to focus on your health is very much outweighed by the benefits at the individual level and eventually at the society level.
Yeah. You know, in our notes and things, I think I posited this question to leave it towards the end, but I feel like now is probably the best time to ask it. So in speaking about sort of our greater needs of our country, you know, what do you feel that, you know, as a nation, we need the most right now in terms of our health and well-being?
I think we need a revolutionary change in our food and healthcare system. And I think we need people brave enough to step out first and make the changes, even if it means taking on some personal risk. I think we need to stop waiting for top-down changes and instead be the people who push the system to evolve and evolve at a faster pace than it has in the past. You know, I think everything else we need as individuals or as a country kind of flows out of good food and good health. So starting here makes sense. You know, I think a lot of our bigger society-wide problems actually have roots in poor food and poor health, you know? And I think that the good news is, Rob, that it's already happening and I see the speed of it picking up momentum. You know, I'm not really in doubt anymore that the changes are gonna come. I do think that the more threatening it is to kind of this old failed system, the greater the fight's probably gonna be, but I'm up for the challenge.
I'm up for the challenge too. I'm right there with you. I know from maybe an outside perspective, and I've had this conversation with a couple of folks too, when you look at these comprehensive, you know, programs and interventions, and having diet be a component of it, it's easy to latch on to an individual diet. I know I've talked about Dean Ornish's program, which is probably one of the best, you know, and most robustly studied programs, specifically with cardiovascular disease, and he's starting to expand his approach, teaching and building up more teams who are able to implement this program on a wider scale, which encourages me. I know a lot of people have given him some grief about his sort of vegetarian, low-fat diet, and especially from the paleo world where everyone wants to say, yeah, high fat and you know, calories don't matter, and this low-fat vegan thing, how can that be helpful? And I think from day one, he's been very, very vocal about actually the most important part of his program in his eyes is community and love. And the diet, yes, it's one part of it, but to him, community and love is what's driving. And yet people still attack him for, you know, why aren't you doing a different diet? And so, you know, for the outsiders looking at your program, looking at the autoimmune protocol, who say, well, really, could eliminating those foods have done everything that you just said? Or, you know, what really was at the root of, you know, these individuals' healing? So I give you, you know, that sort of question of, you know, what really did make the difference? And I'm kind of guessing it probably wasn't just one thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it is not one thing. You know, I know from experience now, personally and professionally, over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years that the diet is important. It's obviously crucial. Our cells run on good fuel. You know, you don't pour sugar into the gas tank of a car. we need to have good fuel to start with. That, I mean, that's just definitely true. But it gets on a much deeper level than that. You know, that's the other thing, over having a long enough view now. I can see that there's deeper aspects to it, and it's, you know, it's having, that community support and feeling validated and understood. That's really important, I think, to people's healing process. I think one thing, unfortunately, with autoimmune disease, is that, you know, people are often, the people around them don't understand that they're sick and what it means. And that there's no end point to that sickness. You know, our society kind of has two ways that it goes. Either you get better or you pass away. And there's a process for that. But we don't have really a process for recognizing when a person is just going to deal with it for the rest of their life. Yeah. And so I feel like a lot of autoimmune folks come into my program really disempowered. And really kind of beat down by that. So a big, big factor is empowerment. You know, we spend a lot of time really talking folks up and helping them understand how they can take control and feel like they have a role to play in their health. So yeah, it's all that stuff too, you know?
Yeah, I almost brought this up earlier in the podcast, and it's maybe a more juicier concept that we'd love to sort of see. You know, you talk about what people come to the program with, and a lot of times there can be a major victim mindset of, you know, why me? Why have I been kind of cursed with these autoimmune diseases? Or even turning to from a basic understanding of, oh, there's something genetic about it. Let me blame my parents or my grandparents. And there can be a lot of just blame and disempowering, you know, a disempowering victim state. And what I found that even in the most nurturing of sort of functional, ancestrally minded clinicians who see, you know, a broader understanding of what truly is coming from or what are the true roots of an autoimmune condition, sometimes it can actually backfire when you start to explain some of the triggers and try to help the person, you know, understand the story behind their illness, and they suddenly, you know, start to realize, what, well, I mean, I actually did this to myself somewhat, or like the choices I made, it wasn't just all my genetics, or, you know, I'm not this, you know, completely invulnerable victim. And I know it's something that nobody wants to, bringing up and sharing that story, obviously no one wants to make someone feel hurt, but I know I've seen it happen. And I think it's something that over time, it's just going to take, it takes time having that conversation to see where people are coming. But how are you able to, or how have you seen that sort of story evolve where you're, you know, people come in with perhaps a victim mindset or just some of that, you know, disempowerment? How are you able to help them understand their story without feeling like, you know, now I have to blame myself for this, for these issues?
Yeah, right. Well, so I think we approach that from a couple of different angles. One is, you know, like basically hashtag no regrets.
Yes.
you know, we kind of say, hey, listen, like it is probably likely that some of the choices you've made in your past probably weren't the most supportive choices you could have made for your health. Especially now knowing probably, you know, any genetic contribution there might be as well. But you can't kind of live in that space either. You know, you had the life you had at one point and made the choices you made at one point, and now you're in a different space and making new choices. And then, you know, so that kind of moves into the next thing we use, which is, you know, once you know better, you do better. And so
I love that.
Yeah, we really try to encourage them that one of the ways that they can get empowered is to educate themselves and get knowledge about their diagnosis and understand it backwards and forwards. You know, I usually tell them that their goal is that the next time they see their doctor, they know as much, if not more, about their specific diagnosis than their doctor does. Because I really want them to be able to feel empowered to get the most out of their appointments with their doctors and to feel that they're the leader of their healthcare team and that their doctor has expertise that they are borrowing. So if they go in really empowered, they can feel, you know, and really knowledgeable about their diagnosis. They can really feel good in that space. And that's where the, you know, now you know better, you do better comes in. Like, you didn't have that information before, but now you do, and you can use it to your advantage.
I love all of those. Oh my goodness. I'm so glad I like, I was kind of butchered that question, but I'm so glad I, you know, went there. Cause that was just so, those little pieces of nuggets, you know, those little nuggets of wisdom are so valuable. And I think I'm going to start adopting that in my, in my spiels with patients.
Well, and I think like, you know, my coaches and I, you know, kind of, you know, sometimes share on a little bit more personal level while we're trying to help our group members kind of wrap their minds around some of this stuff. And, you know, from my story, like, I mean, I'll admit it, you know, I was a little bit of a partier. I had my fun days, you know, I liked to go out for drinks with friends. I even, just awful. I smoked some, you know, that was part of my life before, but I have a different life now. And I understand how some of those choices probably contributed to kind of the slow development of autoimmune disease. And now I want to live a different kind of life and really support my health. And I have the information to do it. So hashtag no regrets. And now that I know better, I do better.
Oh my gosh. I love it. And it's, I mean, I tell people we're mosaics. Our being is a mosaic. And if you choose to leave the fragments that you don't want on the road, you'll just have an incomplete mosaic. But if you choose to integrate them, what gets created is something more beautiful. And we don't have to feel sorry about it. We can make that a part of who we are and move forward. And it's just, it's so wonderful to hear your personal sort of realizations and understanding of integrating those choices and moving forward, like, hey, I'm at a different point of my life's journey now. And I'm not afraid to say that, you know, I was there at one point, but I'm not going back. So it's just so wonderful. I'm so grateful that you've given this much time to talk about the study, your program, and all the facets of what go into it and just your story. This has been, you know, wonderful, and would love to keep going, but I know we need to wrap up, and would love to have you share, perhaps to end the show, really anything you want. But is there any story of a patient or a group? You mentioned a little bit about that first group, which was quite touching to see how they've stayed connected. But is there any story from a group or from an individual that you've worked with that really has just touched you that you would like to share?
Gosh, sure. Yeah, there's been so many, Rob. It's really hard. I thought about this question a lot. It's so hard to narrow it down. Most recently, I've had a few women who went through the program who, for one reason or another, were struggling with infertility that was autoimmune related. And those women, you know, came back later and they had babies. They had their first children, despite, you know, a real strong possibility that they were never going to have children. One of them was a woman who actually agreed to be on a testimonial video. And if folks go to my website, sadtoaip.com, they can see her video and what she shared. Some other women share in that video as well about their progress. But, you know, she was told that there was like less than 5% chance she would ever have a child. And, you know, her and her fiance at the time got married with the idea that they maybe weren't going to be able to have children. But she hopped into the program and focused and, you know, she got pregnant and surprised her doctors and everybody. Yeah. And, you know, she brought the baby the day we filmed her video, you know, and it was amazing to see this sweet little girl who was only 3 weeks old.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I had another woman probably a year earlier who had been in my program actually quite a long time ago. And in the interim, she had, you know, followed the process, ended up getting pregnant and having a baby. And she had rejoined the group just to give herself a little bit of a reset postpartum. You know, there's so many stories and just really amazing things that have happened to folks, just really life-changing stuff. I've had a lot of people go through the process with me that later went on to just kind of carry the ripple effect forward. People started businesses focused on different aspects of health, things like that. But when it's as life-changing as creating another human being, it feels pretty big.
It's so amazing. I tell people, you know, miracles cannot be described in words. They can only be told by stories. And
yeah,
what that is, what you've just told, is to me, it's a miracle, giving new life and opportunity and those ripples going forward. It's amazing. That's gotta be one of the most joyful feelings that anyone can have as a healer, a health coach, doctor, whatever it is, and creating new life and new opportunities. It's yeah. Wow. It's pretty incredible. So, well, Angie, this has been, like I said before, so wonderful. I'm just really touched that I've been able to connect and share this space. And I'm sure as we go forward, you know, we're going to continue to collaborate and figure out how we can continue to further this mission. So, if you want to, you know, share with people now, just, you know, how they can reach out if they want to hear more about your story, or, you know, if they're really suffering from an autoimmune disease and wanting to take part in your program. I know you're getting ready to actually start a new cohort, but how can people who are interested in either just following you for interest or to take part in your program, how can they do that?
Yeah. If they're interested in joining us for SAD to AIP in 6, they can go to my website. Again, it's SAD2AIP.com, SADTAIP.com, and they can enroll there. We still have, I think, a few spots left for January's start. We start January 1st, 2018. If they're not able to join this group, but they'd like to join in the future, they can scroll to the bottom of the website, and there's a schedule there, so they can see when other enrollments open and other times in the year that they might want to join. If they're just interested in learning about AIP, getting lots of free resources, or, you know, checking out more about my story or my partner Mickey's story, they can go to autoimmunewellness.com. We have everything. We have like hundreds of recipes. We have lots of how-to information. If they sign up for our newsletter, they can get like tons of free resources to help them get started.
It's amazing. You need to sign up if you haven't signed up. It is a goal of mine of just wonderful nuggets and tips. And it's something I share with everyone in my family, my patients. It's really wonderful. So please check it out. So, well, Angie, until next time, please, you know, continue holding nourishing spaces for all those in your life.
Oh, thanks so much. No problem, Rob. I'm not planning on stopping anytime soon.
Wonderful. Well, be well.
Thank you.
Thank you for your presence and willingness to receive a new narrative, a passionate perspective, and perhaps a deeper sense of connection with our collective purpose. Please share this podcast with any and all that you believe will benefit from its intention to relieve one's doing and engage one's being. Please share your comments about the conversation on our podcast page and leave a review in iTunes so that the voices in this space can spread to all ears ready to receive it. Music credit goes to Dillingham for their song Vessel. Remain open, stay curious, and forever be love. Walked on fire. In the know you tried.